I'm Gretchen, I'm an addict. All right, I got to read this this statement, and it's the speaker statement. And it says that the NA member chosen to speak at a meeting needs to be someone who is working and living the NA program of recovery, which are the 12 steps and 12 traditions. In areas where there is not an abundance of NA members with substantial clean time or experience with the 12 steps and 12 traditions, there is the possibility that a group inexperienced in Narcotics Anonymous may misunderstand NA traditions and invite speakers from outside the NA fellowship. There are several ways to avoid this situation. Our basic text, for instance, reminds us that NA members from other areas are willing to drive long distances to support new groups. The speaker helps fulfill the group's primary purpose, carrying the message of recovery to the addict who still suffers. When speaking at an NA meeting, we should be careful to deliver a clear message of recovery by identifying ourselves as addicts recovering from the disease of addiction. It is not necessary to dwell excessively on our active addiction or war stories because we all know what it was like to use. We came to Narcotics Anonymous to stop using, and we are here to share our experience, strength, and hope of recovery. All right. I need to let you guys know, right, before I even start, that I'm really nervous. And I say that because it seems like as soon as I say it, you know, after I pray and I say that, my stomach stops turning. You know how it feels like right before you're about to cop dope? That's how I feel when I get up here. I feel like I got the bubble guts, my stomach spinning, and like I'm nervous. And I figured it out because I get just as nervous every time I come up here. And, like, I think it's like I want to help everybody. Like, so I want to, like, have some magical words to say to you so that, like, you'll never go out and get high again. And like, you'll always want to come to these meetings and like, you'll want to get my phone number and we can talk about step work. And, like, that's what I want to project to you. And the reality is, right, is that I'm not going to hit all of you tonight. Look, when I was in rehab, they talked about one in every 33 addicts recover. It's not a good statistic for us. Like, we're going against the grain here. And like, so my job, right, is to come up here and like the speaker statement says, is to give you a clear message in Narcotics Anonymous. And, like, that's what I'm going to do tonight. The topic is a promise is freedom. The promise is freedom. And I need to tell you guys, she called me, the vice chair of the programming committee called me about 2 weeks ago. It was early in the week. It was about a Monday morning, right? And she called it like 7:45, and I was up because I have a job today that I go to on a regular basis. Look, so I was driving to work, and she calls. And I need to let you know that for, like, the week before that, my boyfriend and I just moved into an apartment together, okay? And, like, we had been at each other's throats all day long, fighting about stupid stuff, ridiculous things, right? And I woke up that morning in a horrible mood, right? Just like as I had in like the past several mornings, because I started to feel like my life was going crazy, and once again, right? Hold on, I didn't have control, right? So I felt real crazy about that, and I get this phone call, and the first thing that came to my mind was, "Thank you, God." Thank you, God, for giving me the opportunity to see that, like, I have bigger things going on in my life today, right? I have bigger things going on, and like, I needed to pick myself up and get out of that. So I'm going to talk about the promise is freedom, and when she told me that, the first thing that comes to my head is freedom from active addiction, and that's what the promise is here, and that's the only promise that NA has to offer. All the other stuff that come along with it, like the family and the house, possibly, and the car, and the, you know, all the things, a good job, making good money, that's not promised in here. You know, they don't tell you that if you come in here and you do all the things that you're asked to do, you're going to be a millionaire and everything's going to be great for you. They don't say that. It says, right, in our literature that never have we ever seen an addict who has worked the program to the best of their ability fail, right? And the thing that sticks out in my mind most about that is that part of this program is to not pick up, right? So if you don't pick up, then you can't fail. So I was thinking about that, and And see, I started getting pieces of freedom before I even knew I was getting freedom. Right? And that comes in with the freedom from active addiction. I think I came in, right, and I had about 30 days clean, and I was doing the things that people were telling me to do. And it was about 35, 40 days. I had one day, just one day, where I didn't think about using. And I remember going to bed that night because my sponsor told me, she said, Gretchen, before you go to bed at night, because I didn't know how to pray when I got clean. But she told me, when you go to bed at night, just thank God. Just thank God for giving you another day in this process. You know, you could just be talking to yourself, but just say it to yourself. Thank you for giving me another day in this process, right? So I did it, just like I had done every night, because I followed directions when I got here. So I did it. And I remember sitting there thinking that night, you know what? I have not thought about getting high today. You need to know that for an addict like me who couldn't go an hour without thinking about getting high, I went through one day. It was a miracle. And I had first experienced freedom, and I didn't know it yet. It says in our literature, and I'm going to read some of the literature, because the literature is the truth. And that's what I had to give you out of here. You can probably disagree with some of the stuff that I say. You don't have to believe me, but if I read it out of the book, you know, then it's there in black and white. And it says, as we recover, we gain a new outlook on being clean. We enjoy a feeling of release and freedom from the desire to use. We find that everyone we meet eventually has something to offer, and we become able to receive as well as to give. Life can become a new adventure for us. We come to know happiness, joy, and freedom. And that's what I experienced that night when I laid in bed, was happiness, joy, and freedom. And I'm not saying that, like, every day after that I experienced that freedom, but, like, it got better. And I started to experience that freedom more often, where I wasn't thinking about using all the time. And so then I'm going on in this journey, right? And I'm still not aware about the freedom that I'm gaining in here. Okay? And then I get to my third step, right? My third step. And I realized, after looking back for some time, that at my third step, I had experienced another piece of freedom. Because for the first time in my life, I had made a decision on my own. See, when I walked through the doors of Narcotics Anonymous, I made the decision for, like, the probation officer and, like, the jail and, like, the judge, because I didn't want to go back to jail anymore. I was sick of being dope sick. So I made that decision for them. I had made my first decision for myself in the third step. And it talks about, in the third step, for those of you that don't know, we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. And it was my decision all on my own. Nobody else made it for me. But again, like, I'm telling you that at this point I still didn't know, right, that I was experiencing freedom. Because I did my third step when I had about 90 days clean. And, and look, and like, I didn't sit home and write, like, a script or, like, figure out what I was gonna say to you, but, like, I read a little bit of stuff, and, like, some stuff had popped out in my mind, and as I was reading, I was thinking, damn, it talks about freedom a lot in this book. Like, look, I've read the text, okay? I've read stuff out of the text. But when they talk about your perception changes daily, right? And mine does. So, like, I can read something one day and then read it the next day and get a completely different outlook on it, right? And when I heard that my topic was a promises, the problem, Jesus. Let me take a break. Woo! Okay, look. When I heard that my topic was a promise is freedom, and then I read some of the pages from the text, I started seeing freedom popping out everywhere. Like, oh, it says freedom on this page, and it says it right here, right in the third step, which I was just sharing about, that it talks about that in the third step, it does not say that we turned our will and our lives over to the care of God. It says we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. We made the decision. It was not made for us, right? Which is what I just told you, that I had made a decision in the third step all on my own. Nobody else had made it for me, Right? So like, I'm just telling you about like how my process was for me. I don't know about how it was for you. I'm telling you when I started to experience freedom, right? And not even knowing about the blessings that were occurring in my life. Until I got some more experience. And so that was the most obvious part of this topic that I can relate to you. And now I'm going to dip into some other stuff, right? It's going to get a little deep. And there's probably going to be a lot of tears. But when she told me that this was my topic, and after the most obvious part of the freedom piece had passed, I started thinking, and I was talking to my sponsor about it. And for some reason, my father kept popping into my head over and over, and I couldn't understand why. Like, God, what are you trying to tell me? What am I supposed to be sharing about my father? When I was little, about the age of 5, I had developed a serious resentment against my father, right? My father would go to work, and then he would go to the bar afterwards. And he would stay out of at the bar till all hours of the night. But when he come home, he had a Milky Way in his hand. And that's what he would give me. And that was like his peace offering, you know, for him being out all night. And so I learned at a really young age that if you did something wrong to me, or if you hurt me, as long as you bought me something afterwards, it was okay. I learned that, right? So then my mother would say things to me like, wait till your father gets home. And I knew I was in some shit when my father got home because my father was the discipliner. My mom laid back, right? And after my father disciplined me, she'd come knocking on the door. I'd hear a knock, right? And I'd be sitting on my bed. And she'd come in and she'd go, you know, I don't think you should be punished, but your father said you were, so you have to be. So bam, I have a resentment against her because she doesn't think I should be punished. So why the hell didn't she stand up for me, right? So I'm going back and forth at a really young age about my parents. Like, I don't know, you know, what the hell's going on. I hate my father. And by the age of 7, I could look you in the eyes and tell you that I hated my father. And, like, that was perfectly acceptable to me. So, needless to say, I spent a long time doing things to get attention from my father. At the age of 12 years old, I made it so that my father would walk in on me having sex to get attention from him. He then moved me up out of where we were living and took me to another place because my father believed that where I lived was my problem, that it wasn't him and it wasn't me and that there was nothing else going on. It was just where I lived. So he moved me out of there. And then I proceeded on crack cocaine and heroin addiction for, 4 or 5 years. And that got his attention. So my job had been done. And when I was younger, my dad never said I loved you. And that was something that stuck out in my mind. And I tell you this because that was something that I came in here with that, I'd hear the way my dad talked to my mom and I hear the way that my dad would talk to me. And I thought there was something wrong with me. Like, I thought that I wasn't good enough, that I had done something to make him think that I was bad or that I was weak. And this is before the drugs. This was before the incident when I was 12. This was before that stuff. Like, I always thought growing up that I wasn't good enough for him or that, you know, I wasn't what he wanted me to be. And so, like, I started seeking that attention from him. And it just turned into a vicious, vicious cycle. And so when I got clean, I had this thing with my father. Like, I still walked in here and I still could honestly say that I hated him. And so I went to my sponsor with this. I moved on to my fourth step. And he was at the top of my resentment list. And I would tell her things like, I just don't feel good enough for my father. And, you know, when I was younger, he did this and this. And he doesn't say I love you. And now my 17-year-old brother doesn't know how to say I love you, right? And I'm blaming all this on my father, because I'll walk out the door and I'll tell my dad I love him. And he'll go, uh-huh. So now, right, I'm walking out the door and I'm telling my little brother I love him. And he's saying, uh-huh. Right, and so, like, I'm thinking, oh, my God, you know, is my brother going to end up being like me? And like, I worry about everything anyway. So I'm telling my sponsor all this stuff. Look, I worried. It was 12:20, and I was trying to leave the convention to be here because I was afraid I was going to be late.
That's my girl.
Look. So I'm worried about this, and this stuff is going through my head. And I'm talking to my sponsor about my father. And you know, we had worked some stuff out. I understand today, right, that my father did the best that he could with what he had to work with. Look, I'm telling you the truth. My father didn't grow up in a house where he was told that he was loved all the time. In fact, my father grew up in a house with an alcoholic father that used to beat the shit out of him. Right? He would tell me these stories. You know, my dad has this really good sense of humor, right? So he'll, like, tell me these stories and kind of turn it into a laugh thing, and inside I can see he's dying. And he'll tell me these stories about when he was bad, his father used to tell him to go pick up a switch off of a tree. And he could decide which size it was, but if it wasn't big enough, his father would go out and find the biggest one and beat him with it. So, like, that's the house that my father grew up in, right? So, like, I understand that my father doesn't have the capacity. He doesn't have the capacity to tell me that he loved me all the time, or to treat me the way that I thought that I should be treated, or that this person's father was treating them. So you know what I did, right? I had finally worked out those issues with my father. And when I walked out the door and I said, I love you, and he said, uh-huh, I said to him, no, Dad, when I say I love you, you say I love you too. And he said, I love you too. I did that for about 3 months before it finally caught on. I'd walk out the door and say, I love you. He would say, uh-huh, and I'd say, I love you too. It finally caught on. Look, I get off the phone with my father today, and I don't have to say I love you first. It worked. I'm talking about the freedom of hate from my father. I don't hate my father today, right? And so I started thinking about it, right? And my friend, look, if you ever meet this, you can't miss him. I'm going to say his name because he's probably not going to care. Paul. Look. Yeah. Big guy, right? Big teddy bear. And he talks about the seventh tradition a lot, right? And I didn't quite understand what he was saying. The seventh tradition is a freedom tradition. The seventh tradition is the freedom tradition. And you can take that for whatever you want. As far as if you want to look at it from financial freedom or spiritual freedom or mental freedom, however you want to look at it, the seventh tradition is the freedom tradition. Because it says that every NA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. When I gave up the hate for my father, I was fully self-supporting, declining his contribution. Do you follow what I'm saying? I didn't need to feel like he accepted me because I accepted myself as far as he was concerned. So that gave me that freedom from him. I don't hate my father today. Now, don't get me wrong. The feelings, right, that are associated that my father used to give me when I was younger still come up in my life today. I just don't get them from him. It still comes up in my life today. Sometimes, right, I don't feel good enough. Sometimes I feel like, you know, I don't have anything to say. Like, anytime I get asked to share at a meeting, I feel like, you know, why do they want me there? Why do they want me to share at a meeting? I don't have anything to say. Like, it's just, and it's my disease, right? My disease sitting on my shoulder telling me not to remember that I'm a dope fiend that shot dope. You know, that like, that's all I am, and that's all I'm ever going to be. And that's just not the truth for me today. I need to tell you about, like, that I pay rent today. And that in itself is a freedom, because I don't depend on anybody else to, like, come up with my half of the bills. I pay my own half of the bills. And that's different for me, because my parents handed me everything. Remember the scenario that I told you about with my father and him buying me stuff to make up for things? Well, he bought me a car, like, just paid for a car. And like, that was to like, because I was a heroin addict, right? And again, he thought it was his fault. So he knew that I was getting into drugs, and he just buys me this car. Well, I'm still getting high. He didn't treat the disease. He just gave me another car. It didn't work, and I totaled the car, right? Because I was high. So that's like what I learned, is like, if something goes wrong, then you need to go and, like, get it from somebody else. And make them give it to you. And that's how I carried my spirit for a long time. Whatever acceptance I didn't have within myself, I could just go and get it from somebody else. Because I'm sure that there's some guy that would just love to validate me. Right? And, like, the way that I did that was a spiritual deficit for me. It started to, like, clean. It started to cause me harm. And like, I've gained freedom from that today through acceptance. Like, I'm in love with a man, and one man only, and I don't have to sleep with anybody. And, like, on any given day, trust me, he doesn't validate me. Look, I have a lot more acceptance within myself. And, like, if you want to know where to get this freedom from, it's in the steps. I'm not the kind of person, and I'm going to talk to you about this, whether it's on the topic or not. I'm not going to tell you that, like, you should wait a year, or, like, you should, like, wait and do, like, a step every 6 months and make sure you internalize it tremendously. That's why we do it again. Step work is the only thing on any given day that has kept me from getting high, because there's been times that I wanted to get high in here. In fact, I'll tell you about this. I had 6 months clean. I was on my fourth step. I was sharing at meetings. I was going into jails and like, you know, I was doing my thing, right? And I was in a relationship with an addict who was extremely sick. I was extremely sick. And, you know, I thought because of his clean time, you know, then he was cured. And that didn't happen. Anyway, we're about to break up. I knew we were about to break up. He knew we were about to break up. I didn't know how to deal with the feelings that were associated with leaving, because every time I've ever left in a relationship, I've always had another relationship already started. And it just wasn't like that in this relationship, okay? I was with him. I wasn't sleeping with anybody else. Nobody else was giving me anything. And, like, I didn't know how to leave that relationship and not go directly into another one. That was foreign to me. I had never done it before. So, like, instead of getting high, because I knew that if I got high, then I'd have to start the step work all over again. And trust me, that was the only reason that I didn't get high that day. I went into Walmart with $150 in my pocket and stole $33 worth of makeup. Now, listen, I'm on probation. I'm backing up 10 years for second-degree burglary. And I walk into a Walmart and I steal $33 worth of makeup, and I walk out the front door, and guess what? I feel a tap on my shoulder, and it's the big loss prevention guy, right, that I saw in the aisle right next to me three different times as I'm putting the makeup into my purse. And he says, "Excuse me, miss, you're going to have to come with me." And I have all the makeup in my purse, so how the fuck am I going to get away from this one? So I go back into the back room, and I empty this makeup out, and he's looking at me, and I'm trying to figure out any which way that I possibly can to get out of this, you know, whatever lie I can muster up. And the only thing that I could think to say was, "I'm really sorry," you know, and like, I couldn't lie. And I knew at that point that I was going back to jail. And I ended up going to court a couple months later, and Walmart didn't show up to press charges against me. So the case got put on a stat docket, and I'm not back in jail, obviously, because I'm standing here. And it cost me $500, and I couldn't go into Walmart for a year. But the reality is that today I don't steal. And I truly believe, right, that was my higher power working in my life. Because I have lost the obsession to steal from that day forward. For whatever reason that it was. Maybe it was the fact that I was scared to death that I was going to go back to jail. But I have lost the obsession to steal. And that's another freedom that I have experienced in this program. I could go on and on about the freedoms that this program has given me, that the opportunities, that the blessings that I've gotten in this program. And it's through doing step work. That's the only way to get yourself into a position to receive these blessings. Because, like, God, and I say God because that's what I believe in. God wants to give me all these blessings, right? And he has my whole life. I've just never been in a position to receive any of them. And today, through doing step work and through prayer and talking to my God, because, like, I know my God's voice now, right? And it usually comes in the pit of my stomach. That's where my God normally talks to me at. I can't think of a discrete thing that, like, he's telling me exactly what to do at the exact moment. But look, I can feel it in my stomach what he wants me to do. And, like, I know if it's the right or wrong thing to do. That's where my God talks to me. And through doing that, through practicing the third step to the best of my ability, because I don't always turn my will and my life over to God. Like, I don't always give it to him and say, here, you take this, because I know that whatever you have in store for me is going to be better than anything that I could have possibly dreamed up for myself. Sometimes I don't do that. But the reality is that on most days, I can turn some things over to God. And, like, I try to practice it to the best of my ability on a daily basis. And through that experience, through working these steps as best as I could, I've gained freedoms in here. And these aren't freedoms that were just set out for me. These are freedoms that anybody in this room has the opportunity to experience. It's just you got to take yourself and move yourself over to the side, right? And let God walk through there and help you get into a position to receive these blessings. Because look, he's willing to do it for any of you. I've changed my my thoughts and my feelings on certain things as I've recovered in this process. I used to believe that I was chosen to be a Narcotics Anonymous member and to recover, to have a clean time. I used to feel that I was chosen by God, that he came down and he said, you're going to get clean, and you're not. And you're going to get clean, and you're not. And I realized today that that's just not true. It's just not. God is not that kind of an entity. He doesn't choose who lives and who dies, right? He just gives you the opportunity to walk through the door. And that's what I did. I chose to walk through the door that God opened up for me. And like, it took me a while to, like, get to that point where I could give myself some type of credit for this thing. I do believe that I have maintained the energy to work this program, because I can't imagine that God would give it to me and not somebody else. I believe that the people that don't stick around here choose not to stick around here. And that has nothing to do with my God. My life has improved probably, 500-600% since I've gotten here? I don't wake up every morning sick. I was a heroin addict, among other things. And I couldn't go, in the end of my addiction, I couldn't go more than 8 hours without getting sick. I would go to bed at night, shoot a bag of dope, and wake up in the morning and, roll out of bed, you know, and be sweating and throwing up. And, like, look, I can remember that feeling. I can remember it. I the first time I detoxed for 7 days straight, cold turkey. It was the only time I got arrested, the only time that I got arrested. I detoxed 7 days cold turkey. Don't you know, on the eighth day, I got up and I got high? After 7 days, I forgot that quickly. It took me about an hour to forget. And then I was gone, back down to Baltimore City. I do not, I don't forget today. Like, I have not forgotten from the day that I walked into this program. I have not forgotten about the times that I was laying in bed and I was shitting myself. I was throwing up all over myself. I couldn't make it to the bathroom in time. I couldn't eat. I couldn't sleep. My muscles hurt. I remember all that. Right, I remember after smoking crack all night long when I was sitting there in bed and the crack had run out and my heart was beating so fast and I was just praying to God, please, please don't let me have a heart attack tonight. Please, I don't want to die tonight, right? And then as soon as my heart calmed down, I was on the phone getting another bag of crack. I remember that, right? And that's what's kept me here, is I remember those things that I used to do when I was getting high, and thank God, through God's grace and God's mercy, I will stay here. Because, look, it gets hard, and like on any given day, I don't want to do this shit anymore. I want to say fuck everybody. I hate my job, you know, and like, it's just me, right? I have a great job. I have wonderful people in my life. But on any given day, I can lose gratitude for any of those things, and I can be right back hemmed in the corner. And like, through this program, and through the freedoms that I experienced, it made me lose my train of thought. I don't have to wake up sick, which is what I was getting at. And look, he just told me that my time's up. So I'm going to thank you all so much for like letting me come down here and share with you. Thanks to the programming committee for asking me to come here. This is an honor and a blessing for me to do this. And like, I'm gonna keep coming back. Thanks for letting me share.